You're listening to The Big Cast, your source for the latest in financial technology. Brought to you weekly by the Best Innovation Group with your hosts, John Best and Glenn Sarvati.
Welcome to another edition of The Big Cast. My name is Glenn Sarvati on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we like to do cool things with financial technology for the support of our credit union community and also the fintech community in general around banking and finance. And we like to talk about it here and keep up with as much of the activity going on in the space as we possibly can here in the industry here, and we're sharing it with you on every Tuesday with new content here at The Big Cast. You can find us wherever you pick up your podcasts, which maybe you've done if you're listening to us now on Spotify, Apple Music, etc. Or you can find us directly at the Best Innovation Group website, big-fintech.com. Today I've got a great interview. You may have seen this gentleman before if you're in the credit union space. Lamont Black is a DePaul University professor in the banking and finance area and has become a popular speaker on the circuit around credit unions. He's got a great perspective on the crypto and blockchain space, kind of wedding an academic's perspective with someone who actually has the finance perspective, having worked at the Federal Reserve Board as a researcher for, I forget if it was 5 or 7 years or so, before going directly into academia. Some great thoughts and a good balanced perspective on where he sees the crypto world headed, which I think at this juncture in particular right now is a great time to kind of step back and take a look at that. Busy week. I always feel kind of silly saying that because I'm not really sure there's any other kind of week here in this space. But yet another busy week in the credit union, Bitcoin, digital currency space, all that good stuff that we follow here on the Big Cast. Doing a quick kind of recap of what's going on there before we jump into our interview with Lamont. Long-awaited proposed bill in the Senate was released over the past week, co-sponsored by what I thought was a pretty interesting combination. Republican Cynthia Lummis, the senator from Wyoming, who you probably know, Wyoming has taken kind of a very proactive role in establishing themselves as, I think of, as kind of the Delaware of blockchain, really trying to establish a beachhead for the foundation for a lot of those companies. And Kirsten Gillibrand from the Democratic side, who obviously I would think would not necessarily see eye to eye with Cynthia Lummis on a lot of other things. One might argue that given the financial center status of New York State, maybe that helps to really drive some of the common ground. But my thought is if you've got two such divergent, generally political spectrum people sponsoring the same bill, this says to me that there's already some pretty good meeting of the minds. So a long way to go, but I think it's a more detailed bill than I expected to see. So much of the stuff that we've been looking at in this space has still been relatively surface level. They actually get into some details, and I'm sure it's going to create conversation before it actually gets enacted. Just wanted to share a few of the things. A common set of definitions. I mean, it's amazing at this stage of the game that we're still discussing the fact that we don't really have a common set of definitions around digital assets and things like that. One of the big challenges is who actually has oversight responsibility for these assets. And this bill, by defining which cryptocurrencies and digital assets fall under which category, presumably would help clarify that. Most of them, according to this bill, would be classified as a commodity, which would put them under the CFTC's jurisdiction. But there are others that, depending on additional features around payouts that might look like quasi-dividends or other types of business purposes that fall in them, I'm thinking of some of the altcoins that have some added features along those lines, they cross the line into qualifying as securities. So some of those tokens would then be regulated by the SEC. And as the industry evolves, I could picture that maybe more of the digital assets take on some of those characteristics, and maybe the pendulum might shift more toward the SEC having jurisdiction. Although in the early stages, I'd say a good solid majority would be CFTC regulated. Stablecoins, obviously been a big topic lately, particularly in the wake of the Terra and Luna decline. The bill actually clarifies that there should be a 100% reserve placed on stablecoins, which sounds pretty obvious to me, but hopefully we can finally get that codified with a detailed disclosure of the way, I guess, that I didn't see the word audit in there, but I think disclosure probably implies that it's very clear to see that those criteria are being met. And also an easy path to redemption at all times, that you can get your money out, which is breaking news right now because the Celsius platform, not a stable coin, but I'm kind of mixing and matching things, but some questions now about the ability to redeem some money that is quote unquote on deposit with some of the crypto exchanges right now. One of the things that it does not do, the bill does not do, is it does not require the stable coins to apply for a bank charter, but it does require those disclosures and 100% reserve. Another piece that I think will be kind of front and center to people in their minds, everybody noticed that we now have, you know, right on the front page of your 1040 tax form, the, you know, did you trade in cryptocurrency? Because guess what? If you have a capital gain, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. There is now an exemption to try to make things a little bit simpler that way. And as we go to the mainstream, I think this makes a lot of sense. I don't know how effective it's going to be. Right now, it's written as a $200 capital gain threshold. Again, interesting conversation, because for 2022, I'm not seeing a lot of capital gains out there right now in the crypto space. The original version of the bill, I understand, had that as a $600 threshold before you had to pay any capital gains taxes. Still not a really high number. I think, you know, I don't know if we're talking 80-20 rule, 95-5 rule, how many people would actually have to follow through on that. But really good stuff, and I think a great foundation for an important conversation that needs to take place in that space. So, you know, kudos to Senators Loomis and Gillibrand. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that. Another piece of regulatory information that came out in the last weeks, NCUA Chairman Todd Harper put out a letter clarifying the ability for credit unions to work with distributed ledger technology. It feels to me a lot like the letter that came out late last year around digital assets and cryptocurrency. Basically, it doesn't, in theory, doesn't say anything new. I would put it in the category of a comfort letter. It's got the same type of language saying that the NCUA does not prohibit the use of digital ledger or distributed ledger technology so long as it's used appropriately and you know, securely. So it's really giving credit unions the go-ahead, but as long as they understand that those rules, as they're saying, were already in place. And as we know, when that letter came out, whether or not it was purely coincidence, the level of activity with credit unions engaging in cryptocurrency and offering it through their front ends to their member base increased significantly. I mean, there's still a fairly small handful that are in market, but a lot that are working toward it. So we may be seeing some of the same thing. And on that front, Stanford Federal Credit Union, just in the last couple of weeks, have formally gone into the marketplace with their own buy, sell, hold capabilities for their members to buy and to trade Bitcoin. They join, I'd say, kind of the big three that I'm thinking of in the space right now of the credit union world that are doing that are Unify Credit Union. We spoke to their CEO, Gordon Howe, a few weeks back, and you can find our episode with him in the archives of the BigCast. I'll post a link to that if you want to go back and listen. Great stuff. And Visions Credit Union up in upstate New York. And I actually had a good conversation with their folks. Cynthia Schroeder and Joe Keller are both good friends of the podcast and the Best Innovation Group. We got some content coming up with them as well. They were already in market. Stanford is now in market as well. So, and there are several others out there. Interestingly to me, all three of those, Stanford, Visions, and Unify, are all working with NYDIG as their back end and Q2 as their digital banking provider. NYDIG also has partnerships with all the other major digital banking players for integration, but it's just interesting to me that that combination kind of is the backbone for all three that are out there, to my knowledge so far. And if anybody knows differently of others that are using other providers, I'd love to keep track of those things, and I'll share it with you. Another piece of information that just popped up in the press release, Stanford had shared this. They said that they were able to track over 25,000 buy-sell transactions, that money going in and out from their members in their Stanford accounts to crypto exchanges during 2021. So again, one of the points being that members are already engaged in this activity. This is just a matter of allowing them to do it through the banking front end. I spoke last week at the Michigan Credit Union League's conference, which was a great event, about 1,000 people in person. And actually, Joe Keller, who I mentioned, was on a panel with me from Visions talking about that. And it was very clear from the conversations in the hallways and some of the panel questions that it's becoming more and more common. It used to be, hey, you got to take a look, credit unions, and see, because your members are engaging in this. Take a look at the money going in and out to these exchanges. It's becoming more and more common that you're hearing that, yes, we've done that research and we see it. It is going in and out. What I'm also hearing out there is, wouldn't it be nice if we understood it a little bit better on an industry-wide basis? And I'm going to remind you, once again, shameless self-promotion here, go to cucrypto.report. The Best Innovation Group is pulling together crowdsourced information across the credit union movement. Totally free project, anonymized data. We're not looking for any proprietary information and customer-specific information, but we are aggregating anonymized data to understand better how the money is moving in and out of the crypto exchanges and to and from credit unions. And based on everything we've heard, it's going to exchanges far more often than it's coming back from exchanges. The round trip doesn't seem to be getting, at this stage of the game at least, does not seem to be getting completed. And we're looking to create as much of a robust database to share, benchmark individual credit unions against others, understand any patterns that may be based on the prices of Bitcoin at any given time, the demographics of the individual member bases, et cetera, et cetera. So please do check out cucrypto.report. We'd love to help you understand better your member base and how they are engaging with crypto. With that, as I said, Lamont Black, great conversation, great guy, had a really good opportunity to chat with him. And you know, as I'm recording this, and this is amazing about this topic, things changed so darn quickly. We were already talking about the crypto winter when I interviewed Lamont last week. Since then, Bitcoin has gone down further. At the time that I am speaking, it had fallen below the $24,000 mark. So who knows by the time you listen where it's going to be standing. It may have gone further down. It may have started popping back up again. But I think you'll hear from the conversation that that doesn't change the fundamentals of what Lamont believes about the future of the technology and about Bitcoin itself. So, you know, that's one of the challenges right now, getting past all the noise and understanding kind of where this is going in the long term. So with that, let's have a listen to my conversation with Lamont Black. I'm here with Lamont Black, who is a professor at DePaul University's School of Business, with a focus on crypto, blockchain, business analysis, and money and banking, and has really become a popular go-to guy on the speaker circuit in the crypto space around credit unions. Lamont, I finally got a chance to catch some of your comments last week on a webinar with CMFG Ventures, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to just get a sense. I always think about crypto along the lines of store of value versus means of exchange. And, you know, so much of the market attention has been around the store of value side, the speculative asset aspect of it. I noticed that the way you lay it out, you've got a great website, lamontblack.com. We'll post a link to that as well. But you actually think of it kind of along an extra dimension as well, as money, as an asset, and as a platform. Can you talk about, did you come up with that construct yourself, or how does that kind of play into the mix?
I did come up with the construct. I'm quite fond of it. So when I meet with credit unions, I tell them I'm going to give you a map for navigating the crypto ecosystem, crypto as money, as an asset, and a platform. And you know, the terms you use, like medium of exchange and store of value, those are two traditional characteristics in the definition of money. The third one is usually unit of account. And so when you ask the question, does something qualify as money, you can use those kind of three dimensions. And so I start with crypto as money because the origins of crypto are really with Bitcoin. The white paper came out in the fall of 2008. So I try and help people understand why is Bitcoin a paradigm shift, how you can think about Bitcoin as a form of money. I really try and present it as a form of digital cash for a digital economy. But then I also quickly point out that many people, you know, don't think Bitcoin will ever become money, either because it's too volatile or because it's slow and inefficient. And so, you know, I think there are other forms of crypto that will likely emerge as a form of money, as a medium of exchange. I think stable coins could be part of that process. But ultimately, in today, you know, in 2022, most people think of crypto as an investment or an asset. So as credit unions are trying to figure out for their members and member services, do their members want to invest in crypto? Many of them already are. And so that's where people are investing it for speculative gain as a form of, you know, investing for upside potential. So that's kind of where we are right now in the crypto ecosystem. And then the last part, the P, crypto as a platform, that's where I focus on blockchain, the underlying technology, and how you can build decentralized applications on that technology. And so for credit unions who want to explore this technology, there's many things well beyond crypto that might have, you know, long-lasting impacts on their underlying business.
We didn't mention, and you know, one of the things in your background that makes you a particularly interesting player in the space is you started off at the Federal Reserve Board as an economist, right? A researcher, economist?
Yes, I did. So came out of graduate school, moved to Washington, D.C. in 2005, and spent eight years there through the financial crisis, worked primarily under Chairman Ben Bernanke, and it was an incredible experience. It was intense, but I learned a lot, and I feel like that's really given me some good perspective on things like we're seeing this year, you know, rapid inflation, monetary stimulus, and trying to figure out how we manage that as an economy.
Well, let's come back to the inflation thing in a second, because I had a question there too. But you also pointed out that as you transitioned into academia and teaching at DePaul, you were something of a blockchain, maybe not blockchain, but a Bitcoin skeptic. And it was kind of your students that got you to kind of see it through a different lens.
Yes. And I would go even further than that of saying I was kind of Bitcoin ignorant. Like it was not on my radar. It was not part of any discussions I ever had when I was at the Fed in those last few years. I mean, so I was there for 5 years after the origin of Bitcoin. And so it was when I moved to Chicago, started teaching money and banking, got into the history of money. What is the US dollar? What are the characteristics of money? It was my students who said, hey, you know, we want to talk about this thing called Bitcoin. And so they really taught me those first few years. And I started to just learn more and experiment and understand more. So I like to highlight that from the standpoint of everybody starts somewhere. I've been on this journey for about 8 years now. And there's no real experts who understand it all. So I now teach a cryptocurrency course, and I still am learning from my students because they're out there, they're reading different things, bringing that back into our discussions. So even though my background is with the Fed and I was a skeptic originally, the more I have learned about it and tried to understand it, the more I've been convinced that this is not going to replace the US dollar, but it creates a very compelling alternative to sovereign fiat currency. And so I'm a believer that this is here to stay.
I gotta believe your course has a waiting list. That's gotta be one of the more popular ones, especially in the business school, I would think.
Yeah, and that's part of what I tell credit unions. You know, if you want to connect with Gen Z and, you know, whatever, you know, things go from here generationally, like young people find this very interesting. Young people are very digitally native. I'm now teaching half my courses online. My students, you know, they're buying investments on their phone, whether that's buying stocks on Robinhood or buying crypto on Coinbase. And so, you know, this generation is very comfortable with digital. And so as we start moving towards greater digital channels, not just mobile wallets, but digital wallets, like I think if you want to engage with young people, crypto can be an important part of that conversation.
Now, you had mentioned inflation a little bit back, and I think this is one of the interesting things that's just kind of come to light over the course of the last several weeks. A lot of people believe that crypto would serve as a hedge against inflation, the way gold has in the past. And as it turns out, it looks like, and again, you know, it's a small sample size because we're talking about one specific shift in the winds, but it's more tracked along with tech stocks in terms of going down. Any thoughts about what we see there and how we should think about crypto in terms of its role in a portfolio and kind of its status as a risk asset?
Yeah, I think there's kind of pros and cons to that. So I think a few years ago, crypto was much less correlated with the stock market. And, you know, from an investment perspective, that could be viewed as a good thing, you know, diversification. You want uncorrelated assets. But as you said, crypto has really started to correlate more and more with tech stocks. So the correlation with the NASDAQ is very high. And that's, again, part of why crypto has fallen so much. Just like the NASDAQ has fallen more than the Dow, crypto has fallen more than the NASDAQ. It's sort of that tech frontier. And, you know, I think some people think that because that inflation hedge story has gone away, that somehow the investment thesis for crypto has changed or is broken. But I would say it really is reflective of how the investment culture and thesis around crypto investing has changed, because now many people are investing in it as a technology. They're not buying Bitcoin as a form of money to hedge against the US dollar. They're really buying it as the foundation of this new crypto ecosystem. And so that's where I think crypto has gotten crushed in this macro environment, but it's not that surprising because, you know, just like tech stocks are very rate sensitive, crypto is now very rate sensitive. So with the Fed tightening cycle, we're probably going to see more declines. But again, I see that as potentially a good thing for credit unions who, you know, now probably have a more realistic view about crypto prices. And during this period of lower crypto prices, there's opportunities to learn, start to build some of those, you know, foundational services so that then as the crypto market starts to recover and stabilize, then you kind of understand what it is and what it can and can't do, you know. And so, you know, every asset class goes through these different cycles. Crypto's on the frontier, so the cycles are more extreme, but it's you can't go into it thinking it's just always going to go to the moon, because that just isn't the case.
Well, yeah, and I just did a little bit of math earlier today for another project I was working on. You know, it's great headlines. People point out that crypto's lost more than half of its value since it hit the high point back in November, and it's like about 35% down actually in the calendar year. But then you go back and you look at some of the tech stocks, Peloton, Netflix, they're both down more than that. A significant amount more than that. You can find a pretty good swath of tech stocks that are down at least as much as Bitcoin and Ethereum, for that matter, would be. So I definitely find that interesting as well. You kind of started getting out along this path. When we talk about the fact that crypto prices are down, I think you used the phrase crypto winter, which I thought was kind of interesting in the CMFG Ventures webinar you were on. But you don't see this as a sign of disaster, as you say. It's like, you know, we've had these kind of ups and downs before. How do you suggest the credit unions think about this now in terms of how they approach the space and potentially add it in as a piece of their overall product portfolio?
Yeah, so that phrase crypto winter is certainly not a phrase I came up with. It's commonly used to refer to like the years 2018, 2019. So if people think back to that period, like I really got into crypto around like 2016, 2017, and fall 2017 was where we had that run up in Bitcoin to 20,000. And then when it collapsed after that in early 2018, there was kind of this mood of some people saying like, oh, well, I knew it was all kind of a Ponzi scheme to begin with. It's just going to go to zero. And so now I can forget it and move on. But the people in the crypto market who really saw the long-term value, I think viewed that as a positive series of events because it took some of the froth out of that bubble. You know, when a bubble pops, you can look back and say, oh, well, that was just a mistake. Now we need to learn from that and avoid it. Or you can say, well, things got ahead of it themselves. And now we're kind of back into a more realistic world. And if you go back to like the dot-com bubble, I sometimes in my presentations will put up a chart of the NASDAQ and say, look, we had a bubble in the NASDAQ. Prices came down after that. But then you had this long-term massive run-up in NASDAQ that we've seen over the last decade or so. So I think crypto is likely going to follow a similar pattern. And so the fact that some of those overvaluations have been removed, now we can kind of, some people would say, you know, get back to work. Instead of spending so much time focused on crypto prices, now let's spend more time focused on, you know, the crypto product, on the technology, understanding what it is we're building, what it is we're selling. And so as credit unions start thinking about offering crypto services, whether you want to offer the opportunity to buy Bitcoin to your members, that's one way to step into this water, but it's certainly not the only way. And frankly, if you just put that on your, you know, mobile app without any sort of education or literacy, I'm not sure you're doing a huge service to your members. And so as prices have come down, I think that it's an opportunity to slow down a little bit instead of just rushing in and getting carried away with FOMO.
Yeah, you made a couple of really good points, and we were kind of talking a little bit before we started recording that, you know, that same logic applies to the consumer who's thinking about investing just as it does to the credit unions. You know, some of that FOMO that goes away and some of the hysteria when the prices are way high, you can approach it with a more, you know, clear set of eyes in terms of exactly how you want to think about it, as opposed to just kind of chasing these returns, which is great.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, frankly, like I own Bitcoin and I believe that Bitcoin will, you know, add to my net wealth over time. But I own Bitcoin because I find it interesting, not because I'm trying to, you know, get rich quick. And so as we think about credit union members and financial well-being, that phrase, you know, financial well-being is core to the credit union culture. And credit unions need to think about how do crypto and blockchain relate to that culture, because it's not just here's the new flashy thing or the shiny squirrel that we're going to chase. It's about how do we integrate this to serve our members so that they can grow their net worth, so that they can achieve their goals in life. And so crypto, to the extent that it is an asset, just like stocks and bonds, people can own it as an investment to, you know, reach their goals, whether that's education or retirements or for their kids. But that's a long-term journey. And as a trusted financial advisor, you know, credit unions want to engage in that relationship very carefully, because there's a lot of reputational risk if you just throw open the gate. So, you know, this, with the prices having come down, I think it's an opportunity to kind of take a deep breath, you know, recalibrate and think about more strategically versus tactically, how do we want to slowly engage more in this space?
Yeah, I think the education point is a great one. I mean, we've documented the fact that we know that credit union members' deposits are flowing out to these non-regulated, you know, non-insured crypto exchanges. And, you know, the answer isn't just, oh, they should just make those same decisions with us. No, the idea is help them make better decisions and educate them while you're doing it. I'm preaching to the converted, obviously, but I think that's an interesting one. You know, the other irony of it is, as you mentioned, you know, the fact that, you know, the correlation with tech stocks is actually, as you pointed out, kind of a positive sign, because it's a sign of the mainstreaming of the product. And we talked a bit about also, you know, regulation. Usually when you think about regulation hitting an industry, it actually means, you know, the prices are going to go down. It's just going to be harder to make a buck. But you pointed out that, you know, with the idea of regulation coming in, or when the executive order was issued by the Biden administration back in March, the price of crypto actually went up, which is a little bit paradoxical.
Yeah. And I think that the fact that it's correlated with tech stocks, actually, that's now how I start my presentations, at least the recent ones, is with that word technology. So blockchain is a technology. I think most people now have heard of blockchain. Most people don't understand it because it's complicated, but blockchain is a technology. Crypto is built on blockchain, and so crypto itself is a form of technology. And so there's a lot of people who like to kind of hate on crypto because they think it has no intrinsic value, or they think it's all just criminals and drug money. But, you know, technology has pros and cons. It can be used for good and for bad. And there is certainly some bad in the history of crypto. But if we can figure out how to use it as a tool to do good, and if credit unions can serve their members with this technology, then that's a huge bonus. That's a potential game changer. And, you know, fintech has clearly transformed the credit union industry through these partnerships, through financial innovation. I view crypto as the frontier of that fintech wave. And so the more we can understand what blockchain is, how we can apply it, how we can integrate it, then ultimately I think that's going to help the business grow, not die, and I think it's going to help the members thrive.
Amen. Well, we can go on this forever, and I hope we get a chance to do it again, because I'd love to follow up with you. But for now, if people want to learn more, like I said, you've got a nicely well-developed and robust website out there. It's lamontblack.com, right?
That's it.
And I encourage people to go out there, because you'll find a lot of great resources there. And I'm sure if I, any upcoming speaking events in the credit union circuit that people might be tracking you down at over the course of the next couple of months?
Yeah, I've got a few. I'm going to be at the Credit Union Association of New Mexico later this week. And then speaking to a few credit union boards. And then later this summer, I'm doing the CU Direct conference in Denver. I'm doing the aerospace conference in Pebble Beach. And then in the fall, doing Max for Northwest Credit Unions and Reach for the California and Nevada Credit Unions. So it's going to be a busy year.
Wonderful. Check out Lamont Black when he's in an area code near you. Lamont, again, thanks so much. Great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn. Enjoyed it.
So there you have it. Another week of the Big Cast, and hopefully another week of some thought-provoking content that you can take back and figure out how to apply to your workspace, whether you're a credit union professional, somebody in the fintech space, or just somebody who's interested in the overall future of money banking and technology. As always, I will encourage you to check us out for more information. You can always go to the Best Innovation Group website, big-fintech.com. You'll find all of the interesting stuff that Best Innovation Group does more broadly. And at the Media tab, you'll find the archive of all of our past episodes as well. Lots of great stuff to chew on there. Would also be more than grateful if you would give us a subscription, a like, however you interact with your podcast, if you check us out via Spotify or Apple Music, etc. You'll also find several of the links that we've talked about, including some coverage of the new blockchain bill proposed by the Senate, as well as Todd Harper's NCUA chair Todd Harper's letter about distributed ledger technology. We've got links to those in our show notes that you'll find within the podcast at the Media tab if you go access it via the website. If you have more information, we always love to hear from you. You can drop us a note at the Best Innovation Group. There's a comment field at the bottom of the podcast. You can contact me via Twitter at 154Advisors. Again, my name is Glenn Sarvati. 154Advisors is my firm. You can find the Best Innovation Group on Twitter at Big Fintech, or our grand poobah, John Best, also on Twitter at JB Fintech. We'll have more new content next week. Check in on Tuesday. As always, thanks so much for listening.
Check back each week for the latest from the Big Cast. Or better yet, we hope you'll consider subscribing for free via Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email info@big-fintech.com, or visit us at big-fintech.com and click on the Media tab, where you can post a comment or check out our archive of hundreds of past episodes. See you next week.